An Osho Talk, Beyond Psychology, number 25.
Today is my 8th sannyas birthday. Isn't 8 years a very long time to miss the obvious?
The obvious has been missed for hundreds of lives. So no time is long enough to miss it. On the other hand, even a single minute is enough to recognize it. In fact, it is a non-temporal phenomenon. Time has no concern with it. If you think in terms of years, if you have missed it in the moment when it was possible to get it, you will go on missing. Time cannot help. On the contrary, longer you have missed it, more is the possibility to miss it again when the moment comes to recognize it. The question is from Devaraj. He should not be worried because he has not missed it. And it is not the time of 8 years that has helped him not to miss. It is his love, not the length of time, but the depth of love. That he did not miss it. He has loved me immensely. And in a very difficult situation, he is my personal physician. And anybody in that situation will be in a very difficult situation. I am a difficult patient. I don't listen to him or to anyone. I simply tell him to do what he should tell me to do. And he has to manage somehow to do it. and to do it rightly, because he has to take care of medical science, and he has to take care of a madman. And I won't listen, because I understand my body and its ways. And whatever he has learnt about bodies and ways, or any doctor in the world, they have learned about corpses, not real bodies. They have been dissecting dead bodies. And sooner or later, medical science will have to accept the fact that their understanding is basically wrong. Because a living body functions totally differently. The dead body does not function at all. You study the dead body and you apply your conclusions on the living body. That is one of the greatest flaws in the modern medical science. But with me the difficulty is even more. It is not only a question of a living body, the modern medical science has no understanding of a body in which enlightenment has happened, that its functioning changes absolutely, totally. But he has been able to understand for the simple reason because he was able to love. His science, his experience, my body's different functioning may have created a great problem for him to understand. But love solves everything. He has followed my understanding of my body and its wisdom. Keeping in tune with his scientific medical knowledge, not going against it either. He has done something which has never been done. And he has done it successfully. he need not worry. 8 years or 80 years make no difference. The first moment he saw me, and the obvious became a reality to him. And not for a single moment he has lost sight of it. Otherwise you can live with an awakened person for your whole life and still not seeing what awakening is, what illumination is. So remember, not the length of time, but the depth of love makes the obvious understood. And in that very understanding, a tremendous transformation takes place. Only such people know intimacy with a master.
What is the nature of the mind?
The mind is simply a biocomputer. When the child is born, he has no mind. There is no chattering going on in him. It takes almost 3 to 4 years for his mechanism to start functioning. And you will see that girls start talking before than boys. And they are bigger chatterboxes. They have a better quality biocomputer. It needs information to be fed to it. That's why if you try to remember your life backwards, you will get stuck somewhere at the age 4, if you are a man, or at the age 3, if you are a woman. Beyond that is a blank. You were there. Many things must have happened. Many incidents must have occurred, but there seems to be no memory being recorded. So you cannot remember, but you can remember up to the age 4 or 3. very clearly. Mind collects its data from the parents, from the school, from other children, neighbors, relatives, society. Churches, all around there are sources, and you must have seen little children when they for the first time start speaking. The same word they will repeat many times. The joy, a new mechanism has started functioning in them. When they can make sentences, they will make sentences so joyously, again and again. When they can start asking questions, then they will ask each and everything. They are not interested in your answers. Remember, watch a child when he asks a question. He is not interested in your answers. So don't please give him a long answer from the Encyclopedia Britannica. The child is not interested in your answer. The child is simply enjoying that he can question. A new faculty has come into being in him. And this is how he goes on collecting, then he will start reading, and more words. And in this society, silence does not pay. Words pay. And more articulate you are, more you will be paid. What are your leaders? What are your politicians? What are your professors? What are your priests, theologians, philosophers? Condensed to one thing, they are very articulate. They know how to use words. Meaningfully, significantly, consistently, so that they can impress people. It is rarely taken note of that our whole society is dominated by verbally articulate people. They may not know anything. They may not be wise They may not be intelligent even. But one thing is certain, that they know how to play with birds. It is a game, and they have learned it. And it pays in respectability, in money, in power, in every way. So everybody tries and the mind becomes filled with many words, many thoughts. And you can put any computer on or off, but you cannot put the mind off. The switch does not exist. There is no reference about it when God made the world, when He made the man, that He made a switch for the mind that you can put on or put off. There is no switch. So from birth to death, it continues. You will be surprised, the people who understand computers and who understand human brain have a very strange idea that if we take out the brain from the skull of a human being and can keep it alive mechanically, it goes on chattering the same way. It does not matter to it that it is now no more connected with the poor person who was suffering from it. It is still dreams. Now it is connected with machines. It is still dreams. It is still images. It is still fears. It is still projects, hopes, tries to be this or that, and is completely unaware that now it can do nothing. The person it used to be attached is no more with it. You can keep this brain alive for thousands of years, attached with mechanical devices, and it will go on chattering round and round the same things, because we have not yet been able to teach it new things. Once we can teach it new things, it will repeat new things. There is an idea prevalent in scientific circles that a man like Albert Einstein is a great wastage, that he dies and his brain also dies with him. If we could save the brain, implant the brain in somebody else's body, then the brain will go on functioning. It doesn't matter whether Albert Einstein is alive or not. That brain will continue to work about theory of relativity, about stars, and about theories. And the idea is there that just as people donate blood, people donate eyes before they die, people should start donating their brains too, so their brains can be kept, and if we feel that they are special brains, very qualified, and it is a sheer wastage to let them die, then we can change them. Some idiot can be made Albert Einstein. And the idiot will never know. Because inside the skull of man, there is no sensitivity. You can change anything, and the person will never know. Just put the person unconscious, and change anything you want to change in his brain. The whole brain you can change. He will wake up with the new brain, with the new chattering, and he will not even suspect that what has happened. This chattering is our education. And it is basically wrong, because it teaches you only half of the process, how to use the mind. It does not teach you how to stop it so that it can relax. Because even when you are asleep, it goes on continuing. It knows no sleep. 70 years, 80 years, it has worked continuously. If we can educate, and that's what I'm trying to impress on you, that it is possible. We call it meditation. It is possible to put a switch on the mind and put it off when it is not needed. It is in two ways helpful. It will give you a peace, a silence, which you have never known before. And it will give you an acquaintance of yourself, which because of the chattering mind is not possible. It keeps you engaged. Secondly, it will give mind also rest. And if we can give mind rest, it will be more capable of doing things, more efficient, more intelligent. So on both the sides, on the side of mind and on the side of being, you will be benefited. Just you have to learn how to stop the mind functioning, how to say it, that it is enough. Now you go to sleep. I am awake, don't be worried. Use it when it is needed, and then it is fresh, young, full of energy and juice. Then whatever you say is not just dry bones. It is full of life, full of authority, full of truth. Sincerity. And has tremendous meaning. You may be using the same words, but now the mind has collected so much power by resting that each word it uses becomes a fire, becomes power. What is known in the world, the karishma, it is nothing. It is simply a mind who knows how to relax and let energy collect. So when it speaks, it is poetry. When it speaks, it is gospel. When it speaks, it need not give any evidence and any logic. Just its own energy is enough to influence people. And people have always been known that there is something, although they have never been able to exactly pinpoint what it is, that they have called karishma. Perhaps for the first time I am telling you that what karishma is. Because I know it by my own experience. A mind that is working day and night, is bound to become weak, dull, unimpressive, somehow dragging. At the most, it is utilitarian. You go to purchase vegetables, it is helpful. But more than that, it has no power. So millions of people who could have been charismatic remain poor, unimpressive, without any authority and without any power. If this is possible, and this is possible, to put the mind to silence and only use it when it is needed, then it comes with a rushing force. It has gathered so much energy that each word uttered goes directly to your heart. People think that this kind of charismatic personalities are hypnotic. They are not hypnotic. They are really too powerful, too fresh. It is always spring. This is for the mind and for the being. The silence opens up a new universe. Of eternity, of deathlessness, of all that you can think of as blessing, as benediction. Hence my insistence that meditation is the essential religion, the only religion. Nothing else is needed. Everything else is non-essential ritual. Meditation is just the essence, very essence. You cannot cut anything out of it. And it gives you both the worlds. It gives you the other world, the divine, the world of godliness. It gives you this world too. Then you are not poor. You have a richness. Not of money, there are many richnesses, and the man who is rich because of money is the lowest as far as the categories of richnesses are concerned. Let me say it in this way, that the man of wealth is the poorest rich man. Looked from the side of the poor, he is the richest poor man. Looked from the side of a creative artist, of a dancer, of a musician, of a scientist, he is the poorest rich man. And as far as the world of ultimate awakening is concerned, he cannot even be called rich. Meditation will make you ultimately rich by giving you the world of your innermost being, and also relatively rich because it will release your powers of mind into certain talents that you have. My own experience is that everybody is born with a certain talent. And unless he lives that talent to its fullest, something in him will remain missing. He will go on feeling that somehow something is not there that should be. Give mind rest. It needs it. And it is so simple. Just become a witness to it. And it will give you both the things. Slowly, slowly, mind starts learning to be silent. And once it knows that by being silent, it becomes powerful. Then its words are not just words. They have a validity and a richness and a quality that they never had before. That they go directly like arrows. They bypass the logical barriers and reach to the very heart. Then mind is a good servant of immense power. In the hands of silence, then the being is the master, and the master can use the mind whenever it is needed. And can put it off whenever it is not needed.
What is the urge to melt into someone or something, like a tree or a sunset, that I love? Where does this desire come from? Is it an innate longing to be reunited with something of which we were once part?
Yes. It is not something coming from outside. It is your innate feeling to be one with something with which you were one. And with which you are still one, but unaware. So it is only a question of awareness, of remembrance. You have never gone anywhere. You are still here. Just your mind goes on moving to faraway spaces. If the mind is silent, suddenly you discover this crystal clear moment, now and here. And the feeling of oneness with all. We are one. We cannot be otherwise. There is no other way. Life is one phenomenon. Existence is undivided. But mind has the capacity to forget it. The mind has the capacity to dream of faraway things. You sleep in the night in your bedroom and you can dream of being on the moon. Do you think if you are suddenly awakened, you will ask how to get home, because I am on the moon? If you are suddenly awakened, you will not be on the moon, you will be in your bed. You have never been on the moon. Even when you were dreaming that you are on the moon, you were not on the moon. The moon was a dream. Your being on it was a dream. You were on your bed, in your bedroom. The mind has the capacity to go far away. So once in a while, when it is not far away, when something very striking brings it back here now, as beautiful sunset. A beautiful painting. A great dance. Anything that pulls it back, because something so enchanting is happening here that it cannot wander out here and there, has to rush home. That's why at the moment seeing a sunset, or listening to music, you feel a certain oneness, and it is so fulfilling, so satisfying, that you would like it to persist every moment, forever. And the joke is that it persists every moment, eternally. Just you go on, here and there, again and again, forgetting about it. You have to be brought back. Once you have understood the basic situation, then there is no need for anything. Just close your eyes and feel now and here. And suddenly, the existence opens its doors. You have always been part of it. You are part of it. You cannot be otherwise.
All my life, I have never had a questioning attitude. Is it okay that I'm quite empty of questions?
It is absolutely okay.
My love for freedom makes me always give to my beloveds all the freedom I can. But then, often I put myself in situations where I get hurt. Is there something I am misunderstanding?
It may be much more complicated than you think. First, the very idea that you give freedom to your beloved is wrong. Who are you to give freedom to your beloved? You can love, and your love implies freedom. It is not something that has to be given. If it has to be given, then there will be problems that you are facing. Because in the first you are doing something wrong, you really don't want to give freedom. You would love that no such situation arises in which you have to give freedom. But you have heard me saying again and again that love gives freedom. So you force yourself unconsciously and give freedom, because otherwise your love is not love. So you are in a troubled situation. If you don't give freedom, you start suspecting your love. If you give freedom, which you cannot give, the ego is very jealous. It will raise 1001 questions. Are you not enough for your lover or beloved, that she needs freedom? Freedom from you? To be with someone else? It hurts. And that's why you start feeling, I am putting myself second. Giving freedom to her, you have put somebody else first. And you have put yourself second. That is against the ego. And this is not going to help in any way, because you will take revenge for the freedom that you have given. Either you would like the same freedom to be given to you. Whether you need it or not, that is not the point. But just to prove that you are not being cheated, secondly, because your beloved has been with someone else, you will feel a little strange to be with her. That stranger will stand between you and her, and she had chosen someone else, and dropped you. She has insulted you, and you have been doing so much. And you have been so generous that you gave her freedom. Because you are feeling hurt, you are going to hurt her in some way or other. But the whole thing arises from a misunderstanding. I have not said that if you love, then you have to give freedom. No, I have said love is freedom. It is not a question of giving. If you have to give it, it is better not give it. Then remain the way everybody is. Why create unnecessary complications? Ordinarily there are enough. If your love itself has come to that quality, that freedom is part of it, that your beloved need not even ask your permission, in fact, if I was in your place and the beloved was asking my permission, I will be hurt. That means she does not trust my love. My love is freedom. I have loved her. That does not mean that I should close all doors and windows so she cannot laugh with somebody else, dance with somebody else. Love somebody else. Because who we are, that is the basic question that everyone has to ask. Who we are? We are all strangers. And on what grounds we become so authoritative? That I will give you freedom or I will not give you freedom. That if you love me, then you cannot love anybody else. These are stupid assumptions, but they have dominated humankind since its very beginning. And we are still barbarous. We still don't know what love is. If I love someone, I am grateful that that person allowed me my love. And did not reject me. This is enough. But I don't become an imprisonment to her. She loved me, and as a reward, I am creating a prison around her. I loved her, and she, as a result, is creating a prison around me. Great rewards we are giving to each other. If I love someone, I am grateful, and her freedom remains intact. It is not given by me. It is her birthright. And my love cannot take it away. How love can take somebody's freedom away? Particularly the person you love. It is her birthright. You cannot even say that I give freedom to her. Who are you in the first place? Just a stranger. And you both have met on the road, by the way, accidentally. And she was gracious to accept your love. Just be thankful. And let her live the way she wants to live. And live yourself the way you want to live. Your life style should not be interfered with. This is what freedom is. And then love will help you to be less tense, less full of anxieties, less in anguish, and more in joy. But what goes on happening in the world is just the opposite. Love creates so much misery, so much pain. That there are people who decide finally that it is better not to love anyone. They close their doors of the heart because it is simply hell and nothing else. But closing the door to love is also closing the door to reality, to existence. Hence, I will not support. I will say, change the whole pattern of love. You have forced love in an ugly situation. Change the situation. Let love become a help for your spiritual growth. Let love become a nourishment to your heart and a courage so that you can open your heart not only to one individual but to the whole universe.
Do we have to transcend sex before getting enlightened?
You don't have to transcend anything. You have to live everything that is natural to you. And live it fully, without any inhibition, joyously, aesthetically, And just by living it deeply, a transcendence will come. You are not to transcend anything. Remember my words. A transcendence will come by itself. And when it comes by itself, it is such a release and such a freedom. If you try to transcend, you are going to repress. And repression is the sole cause that people cannot transcend. So you are getting into a vicious circle. You want to transcend, so you repress. And because you repress, you cannot transcend. So you repress more. You repress more, you become more incapable of transcendence. Live out fully, without any condemnation, without any religion interfering with your life. Live out naturally, intensely, totally, and a transcendence comes. It is not your doing, it is a happening. And when it comes by itself, there is no repression. There is no antagonism. You are above all those things that you wanted to transcend, for example, sex. But a real transcendence does not mean that you cannot make love. Of course, your love will have a totally different quality. It will not be sexual. It will not be a biological urge. It will not be animalistic. It will be simply a play between two human energies. If transcendence comes by itself, then more or less many things disappear. But anything that disappears, you are not against it. You can still enjoy it. For example, in a state of transcendence, you are not a food addict. But that does not mean that you cannot enjoy once in a while going to a Chinese restaurant. Transcendence makes you free, not a new bondage. First you were addicted that you have to go, and now you are addicted that you cannot go. Transcendence means now all this addiction is gone. You can go you may not go. You are neither against nor for. You may be smoking. Transcendence does not mean that once in a while with friends you cannot smoke a cigarette. I don't think that a cigarette once in a while will destroy your spirituality. And if it destroys, then that spirituality is not worthwhile. I cannot smoke, not because of the transcendence, but because of my breathing trouble. Otherwise, I have no antagonism against poor cigarettes. Just the smell of tobacco I cannot tolerate. The smoke I cannot inhale. But that is a problem with my body. It is my allergy. But when I see somebody smoking, I don't feel that this man is condemned forever. Is going to fall into hellfire. No condemnation arises in me, because what he is doing is simply playing a game, being alone, finding nothing else to do, and being told continuously by the parents and the society that it is better to do something than nothing. So the poor man is doing something, then nothing, at least is smoking. Transcendence is a very childlike state. My grandfather used to smoke cigars and churut. And he will send me to get his cigar. And the lighter, and rather than bringing both, I will take the cigar in my mouth and light it and bring it to him. And he said, "This is not right. I had asked you to bring the cigar and the lighter." I said, "When I can bring one which does the work for both, I'm not stupid." He said, "That I know, but remember, don't learn this habit." I said, "Don't be worried." Seeing you cough continuously the whole night, it is enough. I don't have to go through the experience to learn it. I learn from others' experience too. His doctors were saying to him, drop these cigars. But it was impossible for him. Whole life addiction. He was ready to suffer, to cough, not to sleep well. And I said, seeing you, is enough prevention for me. And just one cuss that I used to take when I light your cigar brings tears to my eyes. It is enough experience, just to experience that what kind of enjoyment you must be having. The people you know as saints are not childlike. They are addicted as much as others. Just their addictions have reversed. Somebody is addicted to sex, they are addicted to no sex. Somebody is addicted to smoking, they are addicted to no smoking. Transcendence is a state of no addiction, just a childlike playfulness. There is no sin in sex. Just living it intensely, by and by, you transcend. Just the way you transcend playing tennis. One day you throw away the whole thing that enough is enough. You transcend football, you transcend all kinds of things, and nobody calls you a saint. To me, transcendence comes out of your experiences, and you see the futility of something. The addiction drops. Then once in a while, just for a change, if you want to smoke, I don't see any harm. If you want to make love, I don't see any harm. The harm was in addiction. The harm is not in the act. And transcendence is not concerned with the act. The transcendence is concerned with the addiction. And to be completely unaddicted gives an immense freedom. Thank you.
The word content and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.